Some award nominations for Gotham. Will Supergirl get Firefly'd? Legends of Tomorrow just around the corner and the Arrowverse is taking steps. Plus, the latest on Wonder Woman.
And now, from the Fortress of Solitude, deep beneath the super-secret underground bunker at World Headquarters, sci-fi4me.com presents The Rogues Gallery.
Welcome, everyone. This edition of The Rogues Gallery, all remote, all the time. This time, Jason Hunt here in the studio, all by myself. Because everybody else is everywhere else. Dialing in from Fort Worth, cosplayer and contributor Mr. Jeff Hackworth is with us.
Hello, hello.
And from across town via Ansible, Mr. Jacob Eliashar, who writes our recaps for Arrow.
Hi, everyone. How are you?
And also by phone, Mr. Timothy Harvey, my co-host over on H2O.
Hello.
And we are talking in this particular episode about things what we've probably not seen yet, because Tim has been without internet and cable for a while because Google Fiber just got installed. Congratulations.
Thank you, thank you. It's good to be back online. Living through my phone has been problematic at best.
Oh, yeah. I can imagine. Well, and I don't know if I think I showed you. I probably should post a picture. I got a call from Time Warner Cable about a week ago, saying that they had done a check and were noticing some intermittent issues with my internet. And I had noticed that my internet kept dropping signal a little bit and losing the connection, but I didn't think anything of it. I just figured it was a wonky modem because I've gone through four of them. And the tech comes out here to do it. I'm appreciative that they're very proactive on this. They come out to fix it, and he comes back in, and he brings me this little foot-long pigtail cable that had been chewed through, I guess, either by a chipmunk or a rabbit, had been exposed to the elements, and the cable inside had rusted all the way back into the house. So it was one of those things like, oh, that explains it. So you don't really know what you're missing until you're missing it, you know?
But, oh, yeah.
Anyway, okay, so we're back up and running and talking about the DC Comics television shows here. Maybe we'll touch on a little bit on the movies because we got some news here about the Wonder Woman movie. We'll talk about that here in a minute. If you want to join the conversation, you can call our hotline. It's 573-42-SCI-FI, or you can leave us an email at roguesgallery@scififorme.com. We do read and listen to every message. So send us your feedback, let us know what you think about the show, and if you've got theories about any of the shows that we discuss here, you can certainly share those as well. All right, let's get into, because Chris Jensen is not here, so we're not going to spend a whole lot of time on Gotham, but the ratings for both Gotham and Supergirl appear to have settled Supergirl more than Gotham. We had a ratings plummet for the first couple of weeks, and then it seems to have settled out. It's still leading Gotham. Gotham, of course, has done okay in the second season. But first of all, I want to congratulate them. The American Society of Cinematographers has announced nominees for Outstanding Achievement in Cinematography, and Gotham has multiple nominations. Let's see, per episode, let's see, the Strike Force episode, the Scarification episode, both nominated for cinematography, Christopher Knorr and Crescenzo Notarile, who have been nominated for ASC awards. And that's something that Chris has talked about, and we've noticed, and Tim and I have talked about on a couple of things. The cinematography on Gotham is really nice. It's I don't want to say it's a pretty show, because sometimes that's, a backhanded compliment, but it's shot really well.
Yeah, well, I have used as an insult more than once, boy, that sure is pretty.
Yeah.
That movie sure is pretty. That TV show sure is pretty.
But in this particular case, I mean, it is. I mean, and I've said it before, you know, we've talked about it before, the fact that it could be in black and white and it would just be fine because it does have that noir feel, not totally 100% all the time, but there are moments where you get that vibe that you could watch this in black and white and it would be perfectly appropriate.
Oh, yeah, it's great, and the set pieces are awesome.
Yeah, yeah. Well, especially the police department, the precinct. You know, it's very 1940s, 50s architecture that it blends right in, and I think it would. You know, like I said, I think it would be great in black and white. Maybe they should do a special black and white
as well. I have to agree. And also, I think it might need to get an Emmy, a couple Emmy nominations as well.
Well, for cinematography, yeah, I could see that, but not for the show. Yeah, the show is beyond redemption at this point as far as any kind of awards for writing or anything. Although there are some performances that I think would probably fit on that. Donald Logue continues to impress as Harvey Bullock, and Aaron Richards is just chewing the scenery as Barbara Keene now that she's a villain. But you still have the lesbian tropes that are attached to her that seem to be just hand of the writer, let's do it just for the sake of doing it. And some of it just doesn't fit.
Also, we have to, if someone else would get nominated, I gotta say it's Robin Lord Taylor. He is the heart, his Penguin is the heart of the show, and I think, well, he's also plays one of the best villains on TV currently right now.
Yeah, he's doing a really good job over on there. And we've, hopefully, at some point, I want to get an interview with him, or maybe get some of those people over here on the show for once. Maybe do a guest shot on this show. That'd be kind of fun. Now, do you guys see Drew Powell is where is it? He's going to be on The Librarians, I think. He's got a guest shot over on The Librarians this week or next, I think. I can't remember. So it was nice to see him on something besides Gotham. Although he's done fairly well over there, you know, he's got a nice following for Butch.
He's such a nice guy too.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he's because you met him and Robin at Dallas Comic Con, did you not?
Yes, I did. They're both very nice guys.
Did they give you any spoilers?
No, they did not.
I'm ready to see. I want to see Renee Montoya come back. Montoya and Alan need to come back to the show, and it really would make sense, especially given that Captain Barnes, you know, Michael Chiklis's character, is such a hard nose, by the book, do it all, you know, follow the rules type person. It would follow that he'd bring somebody in that would help police the police. And that would be a good way that you could bring Montoya and Alan back into the show. But especially Montoya. And then you'd get a possibility that you could get a question. I don't know.
Well, and that would actually be really, you know, adding in the question at this point would be a little unfortunate, I think, because it would almost be painting that really cool character. There's a show that we need, that, you know, Warner Brothers and DC needs to find a premium cable outlet for, so you can really get into the you know, the big arcs of that comic series, both before and after, with the go with, you know, the
start off, oh, with, for heaven's start sake, off with Vic's Age and
yeah, Vic Sage first, and then transition it in, because I think you could do a season of Sage and then bring in Montoya and just have a really solid type of, because I mean there was a lot of political thriller aspects to a lot of the Sage stories, and then transition it over to the crime aspects. You could do some really interesting stuff with that, but I would want it well away from the train wreck that is Gotham.
yeah, agreed. But you're right. I think maybe not necessarily premium cable, but you could do it on Showtime. You could do it on HBO. But you could also do something like that on Netflix or Amazon Prime, where you can do original programming and come in. But I would say that you'd probably want Vic Sage for two seasons, because you have to you need to give Vic a track record first. Second season would be developing the relationship that he's got with Montoya as a cop. And then third season would be when she takes over, or somewhere in the third season she becomes the question, because you'd have to build up.
That's a good theory. That's a good idea.
Okay, now I want to see that show. Let's make it happen, Internet.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I've wanted to see a question show for a long time, especially considering that when you look at what they've been able to do over on the WB. And what they've been able to do, what Marvel's been able to do over on Netflix, I think there's certainly the content is there in terms of the source material, but it's also something that could play really, really well with the established tones. There's humor to be found in the question, but it's also something that you could go dark and not feel like you're betraying the source material.
Would you include the Huntress?
Absolutely, yes. I think Renee Montoya and Helena Bertinelli do have a great chemistry together. They're definitely matter and antimatter, and I love to see them do that. Especially, I would love to see what they did with Convergence Question story. I would love to see that with finale. I definitely see that with Two-Face and with Huntress and the Question. It was actually a brilliant story.
Okay, so let's do this. Let's open it up. Let's open it up to the phone lines. Those of you who are listening, if you've got ideas here, let's cast the question. All right, so let's just assume in some alternate universe that they've given us the question. They've given us the rights to make the question as a TV show. Let's cast it. So open it up. 573-42 sci-fi. You can leave a message there, or you can send us an email: roguesgallery@scififorme.com. And let's cast Vic Sage. Who would you get to play Vic Sage? Who would you get to play Renee Montoya? Who would you get to play Helena Bertinelli? I would assume we'd probably include Alan in that, and maybe Commissioner Gordon, maybe Harvey Bullock. Are we going to set this in Gotham?
Absolutely.
In Gotham City? Okay, so...
You know what? I actually would not set it in Gotham initially. I would go back to the... late 80s, early 90s question run for like at least the first season, and pick it up with Hub City.
Oh, right. Yeah. And then okay.
Do your political, there was a lot of social commentary. There was a lot of political commentary on the run, the ins and outs and light and dark of actually, city politics and how it can corrupt. And then you could take the second season, you could take Sage more, national or global or whatever. And that's when you bring in Montoya, and then you transition it over into Gotham City over the course of the second season. And that way you can have, when she picks up the mantle, you could have it be, something that doesn't necessarily have to be rooted in the Bat universe.
Right.
Right off the bat, and no pun intended.
Yeah, more Gotham Central type in tone.
Yeah, and I think that you could really give a different vibe, and still play into something that you could cross over into the TV universe if you wanted to. If it came out of the WB, which would I think would be an odd fit, but you could do that.
Yeah,
I know who I would like to see. Play Sage, and I think that it would be a choice that it is not necessarily obvious, but he's a really fine actor. I'd like to see Patrick Fabian. For a lot of people, they'll know him from he was the star of The Last Exorcism.
Oh, okay, yeah. I mean, he's got a good look for it.
Yeah, and he's been. I mean, he's TV wise, he's done everything from Silk Stockings back in the 90s.
Oh, Star Trek. Oh man, I remember that.
He did Star Trek. He did an episode of Star Trek Voyager. He's done Time Cop. He's done Dharma and Greg. He's done Xena, General Hospital. I mean, he's primarily a TV actor, but he's one of those actors who just really is, I think, criminally underrated. Would make a really, really fine Vic Sage.
Yeah, well, I agree. I think he's done, I mean, I'm just looking at his IMDb list right now. I mean, he's just all over the place, super busy. He's been on Scorpion, Grey's Anatomy, just lately. Franklin and Bash, Better Call Saul. He plays Howard Hamlin on Better Call Saul, a lot of people will see on that one. The Finder, Desperate Housewives, Hot in Cleveland, Working Class. I think he'd be a good fit. So who would you put up against him? Who would you have play Montoya opposite him?
I think Anna Oreitz from Devious Maids and Ugly Betty. I definitely think there could be a little comedy side to her, but also I would love to see her tackle that kind of role.
Yeah.
That'd be interesting. That's a good question, because would you even want to take the chance on using the actress from Gotham? What's her name?
I mean, you could, because we haven't seen her in forever. I mean, since the middle of the first season, so.
Although, would you want to start off with a younger Montoya and have her, grow into the part? Well, I don't know. You want to establish she's already a detective, so, and that's something you have to realistically do. You need to have a few years of experience.
I mean, Victoria Cartagena is a good Montoya. I thought she did a really good job with the part, but I think you're right. I think you'd have to go with somebody younger, because I think, depending on how you play it, the Montoya-Sage relationship, maybe you filter in a little bit of hero worship as one of the reasons why she takes over. I mean, the relationship is there, but you could mix that in, too, if she's younger.
Well, I think, I don't know if I necessarily want to go with hero worship as more of a at least initially, because he is a vigilante, the initial conflict between those who serve openly and those who wear a mask, but also the fact that, you know, Gotham, by its nature, in the history of the city in any medium, it's been a fairly corrupting environment. I could see her becoming frustrated, and growing into the idea of fighting for justice in secret behind a mask as opposed to being very public.
Right.
There's a lot of different ways you can play with it. I mean, Victoria would be, she would be really good in the part. I think if we took her outside of Gotham and gave her a chance to play the part the way, you know, potentially she could be, I think she'd do fine.
I think it's almost the same kind of scenario that you'd find with Matt Ryan playing Constantine again over in the Arrowverse.
Right.
You have a character, you have a performer playing a character in such a way that everybody loves it. It just the show around it didn't perform up to specs. I think you've got that same kind of thing going on with Montoya over on Gotham, because Gotham is just not good. It's good in places, but for a package deal, it's mediocre at best. It's got its bright spots, but there's not enough there to overwhelm the bleh.
Since we're bringing actors that can redeem themselves, I already have a perfect idea on who to play Huntress and Helena Bertinelli.
All right.
Ashley Scott. I want to give her one final chance to prepare Hunt to play her
now,
as Huntress.
That would be interesting.
Because I think she deserves a chance. Even though Birds of Prey flopped, I really liked her as Helena. And not Helena Kyle. I want to see her, how she would play Helena Bertinelli.
Well, and you put her up against, what was the name of the guy you said, Tim?
Patrick Fabian.
Patrick Fabian, yes. I mean, they're of an age that could work.
Oh, yeah. No, they definitely could. She'd be great against him. And I think, yes, I enjoyed Birds of Prey a lot more than I should have, considering the flaws with that show. But interestingly enough, think about what that show would have ended up now. I mean, the playing fast and loose with continuity. We don't have a lot of that preciousness with the material right now that we did then. You know,
right.
We've been primed by Arrow. We've been primed by Flash. We've been primed by the changes the Marvel Universe has made with their material. We've been primed by Gotham for, you know, tossing the quote unquote established continuity out the window and making up your own. I think Birds of Prey probably would have done a lot better now.
Agreed. Especially, I would have loved to have seen this. Instead of having someone like Mia Sarrow as Harley Quinn, I would love to have seen them gone up against Robin Lord Taylor's Penguin. That would have been a great series. I liked all three actresses, but to have them, but keep Helena Kyle out of it and bring in Helena Bertinelli and put in the Penguin.
Or we could have had Tara Strong as Harley Quinn.
I was just about
to
say.
She does the voice already.
Well, and she did, you know, and that particular version of Harley did cameo in Arrow in the Suicide Squad episode. Great, it wasn't her playing the part physically. It was just her voice. But there's been a fan movement, you know, there's been online chatter about, you know, people wanting to see Tara actually play the part on screen at some point. So, you know, that would be fun to see.
Let me guess, we're not inviting Arlene Sorkin, who originated Harley's voice, because I would love to see her play an older version of Harley.
I think if you put her up against everybody here, then she's too old compared to everybody. Plus the fact that anytime you include Harley, you know, Joker is not too far behind, because, you know, it's the same kind of problem that we're running into over at Supergirl. And that actually gives us a good point to transition here. Supergirl has run into the issue of, well, if it's Supergirl and she's Superman's cousin, why don't we ever see Superman? And of course, we know that there's a rights thing, and he's in the movies and whatever else, yada yada yada. And they had to take a couple of episodes to explain the in-show logic of why Superman is not going to come to the rescue every single time she's in trouble. So now we've got all of that out of the way. But you'd have the same problem with Harley being the entry point for Joker, because if you did a question in Hub City and then you transitioned to Gotham, and at some point during that you'd get Harley, or if you did some kind of a Birds of Prey version, some new version of Birds of Prey, you're still going to have, I mean, there's a very, Batman and Joker cast a very long shadow. Batman's shadow covers the entire DC universe. I mean,
absolutely,
it's what we've talked about before. Now with more Batman, that's how they think. The only way that anybody is going to be interested in something is if it's got Batman in it. You know, Lego Batman movie has replaced the Lego movie 2. You know, they're not doing Lego movie 2 first. They're doing Lego Batman movie first. And, you know, the Dark Knight Returns feeding into, you know, the Man of Steel sequel is not Man of Steel 2. It's Batman with Superman in it. And, you know, those kinds of things, you know, Batman was the first weekly digital comic that they started to do here back during the 75th anniversary. All of these different things. There's a fixation on Batman that I think, on the one hand, sure, fine, you know, Batman is a good character, he's interesting, you tell great stories with him. But on the other hand, there's too much Batman. Because, you know,
it's oversaturated the market. It's oversaturated the market.
Yeah, well, and we're seeing this on Gotham now, because since we didn't get Gotham Central, we're getting pre-Batman Gotham, and people are sitting there going, I don't care about Jim Gordon's origin story, and now you're bringing in all of these Batman villains without Batman. And, you know, at some point, either the show goes away with no payoff of Batman, or you've got to jump ahead in time, at which case David Mamou doesn't play Bruce Wayne anymore. You've got to get some new actor that nobody's used to, and now they've got to get used to him, and you bring in the Batman, which ruins the premise of the show. So, you know, it's kind of a catch-22. There is no good way to make Gotham work at this point with or without Batman. But Supergirl's doing just fine with it.
I think I have a way we could do Harley in the question show.
Okay.
We could...
I would love to hear it.
We could base her like the Injustice Gods Among Us version of Harley, where the Joker is gone, and he's been gone for a long time, and she's leading the Joker cult, and she has, like, all her loyal legion of fan followers and stuff like that, and they cause ruckus amongst the city.
Isn't that similar to Mia Sara's version of Harley Quinn in Birds of Prey? Because that sounds a little familiar for me.
Kind of.
I think you would potentially run into having to tell the audience what happened to the Joker. Because they would be expecting the Joker to show up at some point, so you'd have to make a point of saying, "Oh, nope, no Joker here." Or you could take it almost, you know, you could go further back. It says you have to set, you know, Vic Sage's question run in the now, and you could have it be, you know, introduce actual pre-Joker entirely, Harleen Quinzel.
Oh, that's a good idea.
And throughout the course of the show, she's never a villain.
Right.
And then maybe your show is building her to the point where she goes, yeah, I'm transferring to Gotham. I'm going to go to work for, you know, Arkham Asylum, and that's the last you see of her.
I like that.
Yeah, that'll work.
I like that.
That works completely.
Okay, so we've got the plot of the question established. So we're all set there. So now we just need to cast it. So Vic Sage, Lady Shiva, Myra Furman, Richard Dragon, Helena Bertinelli, Renee Montoya. If you guys have any ideas that you want to share with us, listeners, send us an email, roguesgallery@scififorme.com, or call our hotline, 573-42-SCIFI. And we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about Arrow and the Flash and Legends of Tomorrow and maybe a little Wonder Woman. So stand by.
This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Whoa, where'd you get that shirt?
Bought it at the convention last week. It's an Atomic Cotton design.
Atomic Cotton?
Yep, they got t-shirt designs from sci-fi, horror, cult films. All the shirts were really unique and fun. I had to get one.
I gotta wait for another convention, though.
Nope, AtomicCotton.com. I ordered a shirt. Shipping was super fast.
Atomic Cotton, where Erica and Zach combine their passion for art and film to create wearable art. All original, made with a love for the genre. Coming to a convention near you very soon. Or find them on the web at AtomicCotton.com. Atomic Cotton. Shirts and art for fans by fans.
Hi, this is Jason Hunt, Editor-in-Chief at SciFiForMe.com, taking a moment to say thank you for listening to this podcast and to invite you to listen to our other podcasts. We have opinions on a lot of things, and we hope you join us both in listening to our thoughts and sharing your own. You can find it all by going to SciFiForMe.com and clicking the podcast tab. Books, movies, TV, conventions, video games, comic books, the latest news, all in one place. SciFiForMe.com, your portal to the science fiction multiverse.
The fall TV season is upon us, and you know what that means. Recaps. Join us over at SciFiForMe.com as we dive into new shows and new seasons with our unique blend of dry facts and colorful opinions. We talk about the shows and share our analysis,
and you're more than welcome to join the conversation. Fall TV is on. Only at scififorme.com, your portal to the science fiction multiverse.
Sci-Fi for Me Radio. It's better than goofy golf.
We are vengeance. We are the night. We are Sci-Fi for Me.
Back on the Rogues of Gallery, Jason Hunt here in the studio with everybody else in the Rogues online. Jacob Eliashar, our recap writer for Arrow, is with us today.
Hello, how are you guys doing today?
Dialing in from Fort Worth, Mr. Jeff Hackworth.
Hello, hello.
And across town, our Doctor Who recap writer, Mr. Timothy Harvey.
Hello, hello.
And we're talking, let's talk Arrow and The Flash for a minute, because I'm going to circle back around to Supergirl, because we have some plot issues there now that the episodes have been flipped out of order. I'm hoping that it doesn't Firefly them. But let's talk Arrow and The Flash, because we got a big crossover coming up here in 2 weeks, I think. The first week of December, I think, is when the crossover, the 8th episode for
December
both of
1st
them.
And December 2nd.
Yes, thank you. And that is going to set up Legends of Tomorrow. We're going to introduce Vandal Savage. And this comes on the heels of Guerrilla Warfare, which was a very nice Guerrilla Grodd episode that gave us Guerrilla City. I was very excited to see that at the end of that episode there on Earth 2. And, of course, the implication is that we're going to see that again. But, yeah, we're very quickly building toward a pretty big event in the Arrowverse, and I'm looking forward to it. I think this is going to be a pretty good mix. The photographs that we've seen of everybody, how many heroes are we going to get in this thing? 8, 9?
I think so. You have Green Arrow, you have Hawkman, you have Hawkgirl, you have Flash, of course, are they adding Vibe into this thing, into this go-around? And plus we have almost all of Team Arrow involved as well?
Yeah, because I don't know that Vibe is actually going to be Vibe yet, but yeah, you're looking at.
Are they adding Mr. Terrific?
I don't know. I don't know that he's going to be Mr. Terrific yet. I think they're still establishing his character just in the context of, because he's only gone out on a mission once yet so far. So I think he's still on the fringe.
I saw an interview with him online the other day where he confirmed that he was Mr. Terrific.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, we've known that from the very beginning. We just don't know when he's going to come into that persona. Because it could be mid-season, or it could be toward the end of the season, or it could be that they've introduced the character and he doesn't become actually Mr. Terrific until next year. Or on Legends. I mean, there's different places.
I have a strong feeling about that, Jason, that he's going to be at the end. Near the end.
You think it's going to be toward the end of the season? I think you're right. I think it's going to we're going to get some time to build him up and give him some dimension and some add some different details to him before he does it. I think we'll get Mr. Terrific after Ray comes back from the dead officially. So however long it takes that to happen, I think they're going to be connected, I think.
So do you think we're going to spin off with a new JSA show?
Wouldn't that be fun?
Mr. Terrific?
No, because you got to have Power Girl with a new JSA.
Absolutely.
Well,
we
have Wildcat training Black Canary. Well, we had Wildcat training Black Canary.
Right.
But I want to see how Legends of Tomorrow works before we go into Justice Society of America, because if Legends of Tomorrow works, fails, the JSA plan goes out the door.
Well, the other way you could do it, actually James and I were talking about it at lunch today, you could, since you've got Jay Garrick on Earth 2, and you have an Earth 2, The fact that we aren't going to get, I know we're not going to get Hal Jordan's Green Lantern anytime soon, because you've got Green Lantern Corps coming into the theaters in 2020. But
could we get Alan Scott's Green Lantern?
That's what I'm wondering. If we're on Earth 2, we do Jay Garrick, Alan Scott, and some, maybe an older version of Wildcat, Ted Grant, over on Earth 2. And, you know, who knows?
Midnight, maybe.
You do Dr. Midnight. We know that Oliver Queen's father is the Hood over on
Earth
2.
And we know that Jesse Quick's there. And we know that Jesse Quick's already there.
Jesse Quick's there. You know, there, you've got a good setup for JSA. So if Legends of Tomorrow does well, and I don't think it wouldn't, maybe they're laying the groundwork for JSA to be the next thing out of the gate. What do you think?
I think that's a good idea. But they have to have...
I think my only problem with that is that we've established in what pieces of Earth 2 we have gotten a design aesthetic that would be a little more cost prohibitive on a weekly basis, say. Not saying impossible by any stretch of the imagination, but I think it would be it'd be one more budget thing they'd have to worry about.
Right.
But that said, I'd love to see it. I think you're right. If Legends of Tomorrow doesn't work, and I don't see any reason why it wouldn't work. But if it doesn't work, it would be really hard to get a JSA off the ground, because you'd be dealing with other versions of characters instead of, you know, the question would be, would audiences want to see a different Flash? Would they want to see a different version of characters they've already seen? Right. And I think the answer could easily be yes, if the time travel, possibly alternate universe shenanigans of Legends of Tomorrow really clicks with audiences, then yeah, then I think it could easily do.
Well, and so far we've seen solid ratings on The Flash, so it doesn't seem like anything over there has been rejected outright.
Slowing
by
down.
Audience. Yeah, plus... Here's how you get around the design aesthetic concerns. What you do is you build your establishing shots and cutaways within the budget of The Flash, like we've already got, and within the budget of Legends of Tomorrow whenever they visit Earth 2, and then you have stock shots that you can reuse that don't cost as much, and then your individual episode needs just basically go to the ground level, and you don't have to do so much in the design aspects of, you know, the bullet train and the big wide open air shots. You've already got those in the library.
Well, and I think you could do that to a point, but I think we also have an abject lesson of how that works and doesn't work over on the soon-to-be-canceled Minority Report.
Right.
And the as long as you have established a world where the tech is different and the architecture is different, on the ground level, you still have to work that in. So I'm sure that, quite frankly, with the success level of Flash and Arrow and WB's other programs, it could very easily be an expense they're willing to make.
Yeah,
and I could definitely see Jeff Johns getting on the chance to writing it, saying, "Hey guys, JSA was my baby for a long time, I'd be happy to help out with the writing process of it."
Well, I think he's going to be tied up on Blue and Gold for a while, so working on that movie.
Is it a movie?
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be a TV show.
No, Blue and Gold, they did announce, I think New Line Cinema is the one that's going to be doing it, same as they're doing Captain Marvel, Shazam. But yeah, Blue and Gold, the Blue Beetle and Booster Gold movie. One of the reasons why we didn't see Booster Gold in Legends of Tomorrow, we got Rip Hunter as the time traveler over there. The speculation is that's one of the reasons why, is because we're getting the Blue Beetle Booster Gold movie from New Line Cinema, who's also going to be doing the Shazam movie and the Justice League Dark movie, which, did you hear who they're talking about for Constantine on that?
Who?
Yeah. No,
but
I did not.
Matt ready for a huge jump? But is Matt Ryan ready for a huge jump from small screen to big screen?
Well, they're talking about Colin Farrell as Constantine.
What?
Which I can see it. I don't want it, but you know, Matt Ryan did
That's
such
a
good
bad
job.
Idea.
But they're talking about Ron Perlman for Swamp Thing.
Okay, I get behind that.
And I can be on board with that just fine. I'm not a big fan of Colin Farrell anyway. But
he butchered Bullseye. If he butchered Bullseye,
because Daredevil the movie with back then, there was a whole lot more wrong with it than the performances. And
I don't have a problem with Colin. I don't have a problem with Colin Farrell as an actor, and I could actually see Colin Farrell playing a John Constantine kind of character. The problem I have with him playing Constantine is that Colin Farrell is notoriously bad with accents.
Yeah.
And yeah. John is from Liverpool.
Yeah.
That's part of the character. It is in the character's DNA. The version, we've already had a version of John that isn't from England at all. You all remember how the number of Constantine films from Keanu Reeves, you know, that whole series of films that he made.
Oh, God, don't bring it up.
Although, if they want to bring Peter Stormare back as the devil, I'm all for it. He can chew scenery like nobody's business, and I think that would be awesome.
Well, and I'll take Dina Meyer in anything. So.
Oh, sure.
Dina Meyer as Oracle? Well, absolutely. I love Dina Meyer.
But they've also mentioned, for heaven's sakes, I just drew a complete blank. Obi-Wan Kenobi in the prequels.
Oh, yeah, Ewan McGregor.
Ewan McGregor.
They mentioned Ewan McGregor, and it would be almost a return to form, going back to Trainspotting. That sort of and I could see him doing it more so. But I also don't think I've ever seen him play, and I'd actually be kind of cool to maybe see him play the kind of con man that John really has to be.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of manipulative bastard that John has to be.
Well, and the online petition to get Matt Ryan to play him in the movie is getting close to 75,000 signatures last time I looked. So
wow.
There is a movement afoot. So So back over on Arrow, Jacob, you've got a theory, and we were talking about it a little bit before everybody else joined up in the call. Your idea of whose headstone we might be seeing, somebody that you think, you've got a theory on who's going to bite the big one.
Yes, it's slowly looking like Captain Lance is going to be dying. I have a strong feeling, because I have a feeling now that Dark is knows that he is betting him for Team Arrow, it's not going to be too long before he knows the ties between Oliver and the Lances. This could also mean a couple of things. One, if Captain Lance bites the bullet, you could also see the feud between Laurel and Oliver go back up. Because in previous episodes, Laurel called out Oliver for not being a good friend.
Right.
And if Laurel knew that Oliver had her father go in league with Dark, stay in league with Dark, it's going to be hell. If you thought Diggle's mad, it's going to get 10 times worse. And that could actually mean that I could actually see Laurel leave the group for a little bit because of that anger towards Oliver.
Thoughts, gentlemen?
I can see that.
You think? I can buy the theory that Lance is going to be the one to die because he is, at this point, from story logic standpoint, he is the most expendable one. You know Oliver's not going to die. Felicity's not going to die because Felicity's going to become Oracle. You can't kill Black Canary because you've already done that twice.
Third time's the charm.
Is that the way it works now?
Didn't Messiah destroy the Lazarus Pit, so no one can come back?
Right, but it's within a little inside baseball here. If you're writing a story and you do the same thing more than once, well, I mean, look at what complaints and backlash they got from. How many times have they burned the city in the season finales? For Arrow, three times?
Once every season.
Yeah, I mean, it got ridiculous. And I think if you do the same thing with character deaths, I mean, they've already killed Roy once. They've killed Thea once. They've killed Black Canary as a persona twice. You know, Sarah's died, what now, twice, two, three times. You know, you can't just keep going back to that well. Whether the Lazarus Pit is gone or not is secondary to it. If they kill Lance, he's gone for good, and there has to be a really good in-story reason for that to happen. It can't be just hand of the writer, who can we kill this week? There's really has to be a good... It has to be essential to the plot to kill Lance. Maybe
that's why Sarah joins the Legends of Tomorrow. She leaves the city.
Well, she's already left the city. She's already left. She said, because she's got the whole bloodlust thing that she's got to go find herself now.
Oh, yeah, that's
And she's
true.
Already gone. So that's, she's going to be coming back for the crossover, but she's already gone on walkabout. So that, dad dying is not going to send her away because she's already gone away. Laurel, I think she could probably leave, but she didn't leave when Sarah died.
But it's a different story between a parent and a sibling. If God forbid something happened to either my mom or my dad, and I had one of my closest friends know about it, I would sure as be hell mad at that my friend for a very long time. And Sarah already has and Laurel already has a grudge against Oliver. So that grudge was going to go intense, could explode.
I don't know that you could call it a grudge, though. I mean, she's got a certain amount of resentment a little bit sometimes because of the way Ollie treats her. But would you call it a grudge?
I think so.
They keep coming back to the fact that they keep forgiving each other for all the things that they do.
But do you think a death of a parent would be the last straw?
I don't know that it would be the last straw, but I think that I think you're right in that he is the logical character to not survive. And I think it could really be the thing that makes Oliver become be that final piece that turns Oliver into the Green Arrow that we expect him to be, that, we still never really have got. And it also could give you, if you really wanted to have some fun, you could send him on a road trip crossing the country to explore America. Maybe he meets up with a test pilot.
The buddy comedy, I think that's a good, the buddy comedy, and instead, I think actually it could cause some tension and bring Laurel with him, like Jed Whitnick, like in Jed Whitnick's Green Arrow and Black Canary. I would definitely have Laurel over I would love to see test the waters again with Laurel and Oliver again.
Well, I mean,
see, that could work if you're not going to bring in Hal Jordan, then I think that it would change the dynamic. It would change the you wouldn't really be going back to do the Neil Adams run anyway.
Yeah,
it was a product of its time. Although, sadly, a lot of the social issues they talked about have not left us.
No, you could still do some version of it.
Oh yeah, but at the same time, I think you could do it with Laurel. I think you could. I mean, I don't know how feasible that would be financially, because anytime you take to do a road anything, it jacks your budget.
But however, if they had a Kickstarter campaign, I could definitely see all of the Arrow fans rallying because they might have a chance to have them go into their town.
Yeah, but how many times have you had Vancouver stand in for what cities or planets? You know, I don't think they'd necessarily leave Vancouver for that. I mean, if you're doing a road trip, at the most, you hire local crews to build you some establishing shots of the different towns they're going in. But it would be something like, what was it? Mad Money, the one with Diane Keaton and Queen Latifah, where they worked at the Federal Reserve in Kansas City, and they shot it in Shreveport, Louisiana. It didn't look anything like Kansas City. The police cars were all wrong. I was like, no, wait a minute. If you're going to place it in a city that actually exists, then why not actually have some footage from that city? I mean, at the very least, send your second unit out, get some establishing shots of the town that you could do, you know, for transitions between scenes, because most of this stuff is in, you know, is studios and sets anyway, or back lots. There's nothing that said, you know, there's no defining architecture in Arrow that puts it any one particular place. So, you know, you could do second unit work in Dallas or Boston or New Orleans or wherever, or even then, just buy the stock footage from someplace like iStock or what's the other one, Video Blocks. I mean, there's different ways you could do it and still not be spending a lot.
But and your logic.
I know. It's just, you know, sometimes it gets me in trouble.
But I know, yeah, but the road trip, can I say something to defend the road trip? If you want the ultimate bonding experience between the actors and their fans, not just on social media, but in not outside comic book conventions,
mm-hmm.
put it in the road. I could definitely see hundreds of people coming to, if Arrow brings the crew to Kansas City, I could see hundreds of people pack Power and Light to be extras.
Oh, that would be fun. Or you could make the convention circuit and do it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean there's different ways you could do it. I don't know that we'd get Oliver and Laurel on a road trip first. I mean, if you're going to do something like that where Ollie leaves, cuz Ollie's already left once, he took Felicity with him. If he were to leave and they take the show on the road, as it were, Diggle would be the one to go with him, I would expect. Or Roy.
If they did Diggle, I could definitely see them try to rebuild that relationship that they lost back in season 3, even though they said apologies. There's still some dark roots Diggle might have.
The only reason you wouldn't have Diggle go with him is because he's married, got a kid, and, you know, it'd be hard to leave them. But I'd say Oliver and Roy. If you did a road trip, but I don't think they're going to, because it makes it less likely to get a crossover. And you're going to get a crossover.
Although it'd be fun to bump into Star City. I mean, not have Central City with the Flash crew going on.
Right, but your crossover, you're going to have a crossover with Flash every year. That's already done deal. Who knows? Maybe he goes and visits National City.
Oh, yeah. Or what about, could you see, like, I would love to see them go with iZombie.
Yeah, iZombie's Vertigo though, so I don't think it would cross over as well. That would be like crossing Sleepy Hollow with Bones. I mean, who'd do that?
They already did, I think.
Yeah, they did.
Okay, let's talk Supergirl for a second. The attacks in Paris and Beirut, all of the terrorist activity a couple of weeks ago, threw the schedule for Supergirl and NCIS off, because the fourth episode of Supergirl, how does she do it, is the whole, you know, can she have a relationship and Ally McBeal and job and man and all that was how it was promoted, and people thought it was you know, back to the rom-com promo that we got at the very beginning, and people were gagging. But the plot of that episode involves a bunch of bombs around national cities, so they flipped the order of the episodes. We got Livewire instead, which is the Thanksgiving episode. And we'll get How Does She Do It this week, I think. So pieces of the plot and the storyline are going to be backwards. Livewire, we saw Jimmy was going off with Lucy for the Thanksgiving weekend. They were going off to Ojai. So there's obviously some relationship building that happened that we're going to see this week, I think. But it's interesting in the reveal that Jeremiah Danvers, played by Dean Cain, actually worked for the DEO. We got a lot of backstory in this episode. Not only for Kara and Alex and the Danvers family, but also for a little fleshing out of Cat Grant and the relationship that she's got with Kara, because, you know, Kara reveals that she's a foster kid, and her parents died in a fire when she was young, and Kat starts to warm up and realizes, hey, there's an actual person standing here in my office, and I don't know a thing about her. And I thought that was nice to see, because, you know, up until this point, you know, we've had the Devil Wears Prada Cat Grant, and now we're starting to see some chinks in that armor with her relationship with Livewire, with Leslie, a relationship with Kara starting to develop a little bit more, and we've seen her flirty a little bit with Maxwell Lord, so we know there's some backstory there that we're going to get. And now we're coming up on Red Tornado next week, and we've seen photographs, Lucy in uniform, so she's going to be a key element in that as well. So I don't know. I think we're on track. Hopefully the episode flip doesn't do too much to people understanding what's going on in the plot. So
one question I have is, since you bring up the DEO, do you think we're going to have Director Bones in the future?
No. Well, okay. Let me qualify that. Not the visual that we got in the comics, certainly.
Yeah.
Because that would be too expensive of an ongoing effect. But you could have a character. You could have that character. He just wouldn't look that like that. Which would kind of be cool to have that character. And eventually, after Hank Henshaw turns evil. and stop, you know.
Yeah.
But you know what? I don't think the flip in the episode is going to have the impact that it would have had if we were not in the era of streaming video and binge watching and the easy access to episodes of all kinds of things online. The way audiences view the content has changed. We don't have to worry about one episode a week. You know, we can go and not being able to go back and watch an episode until it was aired again. Or the video cassettes came out, which is much longer in the days of Firefly than, say, you know, a DVD release or the first half of a season comes out, you know, around Christmas.
Well, and now did you see the story that broke this week? Fox is the first network to move away. They are no longer going to be looking at same day numbers. Did you see this?
Really? No, but it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah.
Same day numbers don't matter.
Hollywood Reporter, it's all over the place. This is the Hollywood Reporter. They announced last Friday afternoon it will no longer issue reports on its own Live Plus same day ratings. So the only ratings numbers that they're going to release are going to be what, Live Plus 3, Live Plus 7? So same day, which is really an indication of how, like what you're saying, Tim, the way we watch it doesn't necessarily matter so much as the fact that we are watching it at some point. So I think that's certainly going to have an impact in how shows get promoted, much less programmed.
Well, your daily numbers are going to matter for your advertisers. That's because ad rates are still going to be important for your network TV and advertising.
Right.
Right. But for the viewing audience, the significant chunk of whom fast forward through the commercials anyway, or get their content from a streaming service where they can, you know, the ads are actually less, the ad agencies will still need those numbers and they will still get them. But yeah, you just don't, that's not important anymore. It's not, you know, the things that would say derailed Firefly for your story being told out of order when there was just, you know, not only, you were running into not only the fact that the studio was tampering
mm-hmm.
with the set order, but again, we were in that period where set orders of episodes was not as common as it is now. You know, right. the fact that you should watch this episode before you watch this episode before you watch this episode, outside of soap operas, that was not a prime time network thing. So yeah, the model has changed. So that doesn't surprise me.
Jeff, you've been rather quiet.
Oh yeah, I was just taking in what everybody was saying. I totally agree with that, by the way.
Okay. Well, let's talk Wonder Woman for a second. We got the announcement over the weekend that principal photography has begun. It is official. You know, and I was thinking that haven't they been shooting for a while? Didn't we already get rumors circulating around? Because we've seen that photograph of Chris Pine in costume for a couple of weeks now, I think, has been floating around the internet. We do have confirmation. Go ahead.
There is a difference between principal photography and B unit photography.
Well, that's true.
So they probably have been shooting a lot of preliminary stuff, but I mean, they're probably referring principal stuff to getting Gal Gadot out there, and you know, the real meat of the story. Right. As I was, you know, it again, we're this is a little inside baseball for the average viewing audience. I mean, the bigger movie audience outside of the comic book fans, you know, they're not necessarily going to have been following the fact that, you know, some of this stuff is already underway. So, the thing that surprised me about this is that in so many ways that the Marvel Universe has led the whole movie thing, the fact that we are actually getting our first big female-centric comic book movie, and we're getting it from DC, they're beating Captain Marvel, they're beating Black Widow, they're beating any of the other potential Marvel superheroines that you could put out there. And I was like, well, wait a minute. How did that happen? You know, I mean, you'd think that Marvel would have been ahead of this game right here.
Well, I still think Black Widow's coming to Netflix. If they do anything with her as a solo piece, it'll be on Netflix.
I think Black Widow needs to have a solo film just to say hot, just for her, because I think Scarlett Johansson's been with the Marvel Universe since Iron Man 2. I think she deserves some kind of reward for staying with them for so long, especially having her own thing. I would go watch a Black Widow solo feature.
Well, see, I wouldn't do it as a feature because then you only get 2 hours to tell the story. I would do 13 hours on Netflix so you can tell the backstory, the recruiting story, the red room, the Budapest. I still want to see what happened in Budapest. She ran across Winter Soldier in Iraq. I mean, there's all sorts of things that she's, all of these different little mentions of things that have gone on in her past that you're not going to be able to cover in a 2-hour feature film. You're going to be able to do much more with that with a season or two or three, 13 episodes apiece on Netflix. Plus the fact that you can do it as a hard R, which, it's a spy novel type of thing where it's going to get violent, it's going to get ugly. You could do more with it. You're not going to put out an R-rated Black Widow movie. You could do a little bit more. I mean, not necessarily. It's not going to be a hard R like Jessica Jones. Jessica Jones is right on the edge. Black Widow wouldn't be like that, but you're talking about, torture and spy stuff and assassinations. So,
I think She-Hulk would make a much better movie if Marvel was going to go with a female hero.
I would flip it, because as much as I would love to see a 13-episode run for Black Widow, the time commitment and the financial commitment to get Scarlett Johansson to do that is probably not in the cards. But give us a Jennifer Walters, She-Hulk Netflix series where, and as opposed to Daredevil and Jessica Jones, which really are just amazing pieces of television. I made it through Jessica Jones, finished that up today, and I think it's the finest thing Marvel's ever done.
Yeah.
It's not for everybody because it is very dark and it is very grim. But in terms of storytelling, I think it might be the finest thing they've done. Mm. But for She-Hulk, you go the opposite direction and you let the humor come out.
Yeah.
And you let the playfulness of the character come out, and you give us the first real long-form Marvel comedy. You can have all the destruction you want and moments of darkness, but at the core, She-Hulk has always worked best when it's been fun.
Have we heard any more? Let's bring it back to DC, since that's our topic. Have we heard any more about the DC comedy, the workplace comedy that they were talking about that they announced, the insurance company thing?
I haven't heard anything more about it.
I haven't either.
And I think that would be a lot of fun. And I think that's an opportunity for DC to really give audiences something completely new and unexpected. I'd like to hear more about it.
Same here.
I think
one of my friends said the Wonder Woman picture looks like she belongs in The Force Awakens.
Yeah, it does look very Jedi robish, what she's got on, doesn't it?
I think it's a great picture.
It is, and it does give you a little bit of a
movie.
Yeah, it gives you a little bit of a vibe of what kind of film they're going to be making there. I liked it.
I got there's a shadow of a woman behind her, and we could assume that maybe that's her. Maybe in a heroic pose, just like foreshadowing her being a hero.
Could be.
Or maybe like it's her mom watching over her.
That's
something like that.
Yeah. I find it interesting that the hate for Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman seems to have died down, while the Batfleck hate still is simmering out there, and I find that really interesting. You know?
Well, okay, two things about that. First of all, that was before anybody saw Gal Gadot do anything resembling appearing as Wonder Woman. We got a bit of that. We got seconds of it in the longer Batman v Superman trailer. And people sat there and went, okay, yeah, she looks pretty cool.
Yeah.
And that was it. That was the switch that was flipped. And secondly, you know, and that, you know, Affleck hate exists up until the point he puts out a good movie. And they go like, oh, all right, that was a good movie.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Argo comes out. Everyone's like, Argo, oh, what a terrible. Oh, actually, hey, that's really good. Okay, never mind. If he is as good as people are saying he's supposed to be in Batman v Superman,
mm-hmm.
then people will get over it, like they got over Michael Keaton.
Yeah, I think they'll get over it one way or the other because they have to. I mean, he's playing Batman.
Yeah, you know, I mean, come on, Batman was played by Val Kilmer. Batman was played by George Clooney.
Yeah,
Batman was, you know.
Yeah, it's anybody.
The biggest bat sin committed right now is that Batman 66 is no longer being published.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah.
Although have you guys seen the final panels of the last issue?
No, I missed it.
No.
Okay, I won't say anything more. When you get a chance to see him, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. It's the perfect end.
Awesome. Can't wait to read it. End.
All right. And speaking of perfect ends, that'd be a good place for us to wrap up there. So I want to thank everybody for their time today. Jeff Hackworth.
Thank you. Thank you.
Tim Harvey.
Always a pleasure, gentlemen.
And Jacob Elyashar.
See you guys later.
And my name is Jason Hunt. On behalf of everyone here at Sci-Fi for Me Radio, thanks very much for listening. If you would like to join the conversation, don't forget, we do have a hotline you can call. It's area code 573-42-SCI-FI. You can leave us an email, roguesgallery@scififorme.com. Find us on all the social media. You can leave us comments there. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Tumblr, Google+, YouTube, and Pinterest. For those of you who are into cosplay, our Pinterest boards are all cosplay all the time. And you can find interviews with cosplayers over at cosplaydiaries.com. And we would love to hear your story if you've got one you want to share. And also share our shows. You can find a number of different podcasts over on iTunes. Just look for Sci-Fi for Me. And that's where you'll find us. Share it with your friends, inflict us on your enemies, and you can join us for another episode of the Rogues Gallery next week.
This has been a presentation of SciFiForMe.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.